Grab your phone, tablet, or whatever you listen on and get comfy, because here's another great episode of the Pop Zara Podcast. Enjoy it.
At last. My boy. I have been every voice you have ever heard inside your head.
The dead speak. That's right. You're listening to the Pop Zara Podcast. Back once again, despite all odds, episode 9, or whatever episode we're on, talking about Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, a.k.a. the final episode in the Skywalker saga, so they say, until the next one comes, and it's called episode 10, The Search for More Money. If you get that joke, you're a nerd, and I love it. Welcome back, everybody. This is Nathan Evans, managing editor of PopSari.com. Here today talking about Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, and with me is, we got to just shorten this down, Ethan Brehm, welcome back to the podcast, talking about the new Star Wars movie, Rise of Skywalker. I cannot say the whole thing.
It's a How's mouthful. It going? Yeah, it's a mouthful.
It's a mouthful, and you know what's funny? It's the second Star Wars movie in the saga without the number in the title.
So, yeah, that's true.
So, and I want to get back into that a second. So, Ethan, real quick, full disclosure, our buddies at Disney sent you and your lovely wife...
Yep.
Okay, good. I have to say that. And your lovely wife to the Disney studio last week. You saw Star Wars before most of the universe, which a good contingent of people listening to this are insanely jealous and yet worshipful of you for that reason.
There you
and
go.
And you came out not enchanted, as if we could say that nicely.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because I want to talk about that. 2019, The Rise of Skywalker, the ninth and purportedly final episode in the Skywalker saga, a.k.a. as we will refer to it, as the sequel trilogy, as opposed to the prequel trilogy, which were, let's correct me if I'm wrong, 1999's The Phantom Menace, 2002's Attack of the Clone, and 2005's Revenge of the Sith, and not talking about the original trilogy, which is 1977's Star Wars A New Hope, is that right? Yeah.
Yep.
1980's Empire Strikes Back, and 1983's Return of the Jedi, and we do not count the Ewok Adventures. If we did, Wilford Brimley would be canon. So,
oh god, yeah, we don't want that. We don't want that.
I do want that. I want that more than you can imagine.
You want Wilford Brimley to be canon?
I want Wilford Brimley talking about bears and talking about teddy bears inside the Star Wars canon. I really, really, really do. I really do. He was born old. He was like Benjamin Button.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so you saw the movie, and just for those people listening, we've decided before, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the movie, and we're not going to be spoilery, but then, totally spoilery. We're going to give everything away. And we're going to do it in just a nice compressed time where you don't feel cheated, and hopefully... you go to the movie and you make it up for yourselves. Because, Ethan, I think we both know what you and I say isn't going to change a damn thing. You're going to see the movie. You're probably going to see it twice. And you're probably going to see it three times. You're going to buy the Blu-ray, get the download, get the 4K remaster, go see 3D re-releases, get it tattooed on your butt, and still hate it.
Yeah.
That's the standard
Star Wars. And then watch it sequentially with the rest of the movies on Disney Plus.
You know, there's going to be deaths, because it used to be I'm going to watch the trilogy forward, backwards, then it was the prequels, all the way forward sequentially, all the way sequentially backwards. Now you got to watch 9 movies, that's 18 movies, plus the spinoffs, plus the Ewoks, plus the games. I just don't leave home. Uber Eats, buckets of chicken, that's a Friday night. That's a good way to just say goodbye to the world. So
yeah, do you buy into the watching order of watching it when it released? Or because I know some people watch... they believe in watching the prequel trilogy first and then,
No, I'm not one of those.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I follow what's called the C.S. Lewis order. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
So for those nerds who don't know, the C.S. Lewis is, of course, referring to The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, which was a book series that some of you may remember before Christianity was banished from schools. Sorry, Aslan. The books came out of order. Started with, what, six, then it went to 2, 3, 5, whatever. They just weren't released in order. The sequence matters, and I'll tell you this, final thoughts. Lord of the Rings, the trilogy, came out, 2001, 2, and 3?
Something like that.
And then a decade later, we got The Hobbit. And the problem I've always felt is that when Peter Jackson did The Hobbit, he treated it like a prequel to Lord of the Rings. The problem, though, it wasn't. It really wasn't. It was written over, two decades before Lord of the Rings. So,
yeah. That's true. That's true.
Yeah, Tolkien was not cognizant of what was to come. And so when you treat it like a prequel, that gives you the freedom to go and splice crap in that shouldn't belong, like Legolas and fictional characters and foreshadowing. It's, you know, sequence matters.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Sequence matters. It's and by the way, we're going to talk about that because George Lucas himself did this in the original trilogy. I mean, he brushes it aside, like, you know, brother and sister kissing and Obi-Wan being a total ass jerk about not telling Luke about his father. But, you know, truth, it's true from a certain point of view that you can make stuff up and say you knew it all along. So, and we got a lot of that in Rise of Skywalker. Pretty much the whole damn movie is we made it up as we went along. So,
oh, totally.
So, but again, full disclosure, you didn't like it very much, and I didn't hate it. Okay, let's talk about the story real quick. So episode 9, the greatest opening crawl, I think, in the saga, just with the first words, the dead speak, with an exclamation point. I love that.
Yeah.
And who is the dead referring to, supposedly?
Palpatine.
I just did a spit take. But he's dead. We saw his ass get thrown in the tunnel.
Yeah, but he exploded. I mean, you can make anything possible if the fans want it bad enough.
We saw him die. He exploded in a planet. He died twice.
Yeah, and it was Vader's redemption too. So I mean,
yeah. So take that away.
How much of a slap in the face is that?
If you were watching in 1983, the Emperor died. The Emperor died. Darth Vader died. Luke won. If you're watching in 2019, nope.
Yeah, yeah.
We went back to your childhood and took that away.
Yeah, totally retconned. So his death and.
Yeah, that's an issue that is we will give you a spoiler that is never addressed in this movie in any capacity whatsoever. You just go with it, and I love how people shrug it off, like, "Oh, he's back. Oh no, he's back. Yeah, his ass died." So it begs the question. So Palpatine's back, and apparently he's in charge of the whole shebang, right? That's what we're. So he made the First Order. Let's address the bad guy that was killed in the last movie, The Last Jedi. So what about Snoke? Yep. What happened to Snoke? Who was Snoke?
So he was just, from what I gathered, was a puppet of Palpatine, and he was made just to control and lure Kylo to the dark side or something.
He's bait, sort of.
That's what I figured out.
Did you see in the Emperor's throne room they had other Snokes? So it leads, like, they grew him in a jar.
Yeah, I know, it was bizarre.
Do you think that maybe Snoke was a clone?
I mean, maybe that's. I mean, there are. I mean, the clone thing has been kind of a topic of discussion, but yeah, possibly.
Yeah, I wish we knew, but they never tell us anything.
Yeah.
Ever. I mean, it's fun to look at. Again, we'll get into the spoilers. What I thought. So anyway, Palpatine's back. He's OGing, proving once again that it doesn't matter what happens, but absolutely nobody dies in Star Wars when you get thrown down a chasm.
Yeah. Yeah.
You always survive. You scream a little, you laugh a little, you come back, you shrug it off.
You might have look even creepier than the first time.
Yeah, you're always disfigured. You might get disfigured, though. You might lose a hand, you might look like a pile of human garbage. But which, by the way, the Emperor totally looked awesome. I'm sorry, he's my favorite part. But
he did look good, yeah.
He looked pretty good, but we'll get into that. Yeah. So anyway, the original characters, of course, we got Ren, our hero. I'm sorry, Rey. Sorry, it's so hard to keep track of these boring characters. You have Rey, you have Poe, and you have Finn, and they're doing their thing, and they're joined by Leia, who's resurrected from digital footage from Force Awakens. And goddammit, they try, man, they do try, but it's not convincing. It's awkward. It's really awkward.
You feel like maybe it was restraining a little bit to move the plot along how they wanted to move because they were only working with certain footage, and it felt like that, you know? It felt kind of constricting.
Which is funny because at a later moment in the movie, they do digitally reconstruct young Leia. Again.
Yeah.
And I think they just reused the avatar from Rogue One a little bit. But
Yeah. That looked good, actually, I thought.
Yeah, and they did Mark Hamill, so it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
And so we'll say this, though. So they got this. Leia's the general. None of the plan worked. And let's just say this. Here's a big spoiler for you. This movie completely ignores 99% of The Last Jedi. It does not happen. It was a fever dream that pretty much never happened. Not literally, but they just skip over everything. They just said, let's go with it. Let's just ignore it. And they actually retry the same plot. Their plan at one point becomes the exact same plan as Last Jedi. Let's go out, put a beacon, and call everybody and see who shows up.
Yeah.
And they say in the movie, they make a big point, we tried it, nobody showed up, it's dead. So let's try it again.
Yeah.
Let's just do the exact same thing. And no spoilers, but you can imagine what happens. So what's the thing? They got to find this MacGuffin. They got to find this triangle thing that's a Sith artifact that will lead them to Palpatine. Is that it? Is that the?
Yeah, lead them to the Sith planet of Exegol, what was it called?
Yeah, it's basically the plot of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. It's exactly the same plot.
It is actually kind of,
It's exactly the plot. I just thought about that. Oh my
God. Totally an Indiana. And that's the thing. I thought that the whole device, and then because then they find a dagger that has this ancient Sith language on it that no one can read except C-3PO. And it kind of leads them on like a treasure hunt. And it's cool. And it makes you excited. But then it just never feels like a treasure hunt after that.
Yeah.
And everything, you know, and it's just, I think they really missed an opportunity with taking advantage of this really, I thought, exciting premise.
It was actually a premise that kept the characters together for the most part.
Yeah.
Whereas the last movie, Last Jedi, a big criticism is that the characters are always separate. And that destroyed the cohesion that a Star Wars movie has where these characters get together and they get to have a little song and dance. And I will say this, let's be honest, like Rose, right? Rose, I know she's become very divisive. She's essentially the Jar Jar Binks of this trilogy. And much like, I have nothing bad to say about the actress, and I feel, you know, if you're one of those people that defame an actress because of the role, screw you, don't do that. But Jar Jar was a crux of the original Phantom Menace, and then he was sidelined completely in the rest of the prequels. He showed up, but that's it, and that's Rose in this movie for the most part. She shows up, she does a few things, but she doesn't join our friends on a merry adventure. If you're anti-Rose, well, here's your movie. Congratulations.
And there was kind of like a love story at the end of Last Jedi, a little bit with, you know, there's a triangle between Rose and Finn and Rey, and none of that gets remotely.
Can we just say this? Rose was a stalker.
Yeah, it was.
She crashed her car into his car out of love.
Yep,
that's stalking.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do for love? What do we do for love? Crazy eyes. You know, Star Wars doesn't need Fatal Attraction. Okay, she literally crashes her car to save him.
Yeah,
out of nowhere, she used love.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's weird, and it's completely. I don't want to say retcon, but it's banished from this galaxy.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. It's completely one hand. At one time, he puts his hand on her shoulder like a buddy.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? He didn't say it. Let's be friends.
Yeah, and it's one of the many things that kind of gets ignored from the last movie, I think, too.
Oh, we're getting close to spoilers, and we'll have fun here.
Yeah, I know.
So anyway, they're having a magic adventure. We're going through things. Like you said, it's an exciting premise, and it's exciting to look at. I think this is the best looking of the new. I can't say it. Sequel trilogy.
Yeah.
And I just want to say this, and this is not a spoiler, but J.J. is a better visual director than Rian Johnson. And there seems to be, correct me if I'm wrong, but there seems to be a better cohesion in spectacle. And he's more open to doing things that are fun to look at just for the sake of fun to look at.
Yeah. Sometimes a little bit too much, though.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things I liked about the original trilogy with, you know, what was it, Irvin Kershner did The Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
And you have planets like Hoth and Endor, and they're so barren. And it's, like, Endor is just trees and, like, little walkways. And that's all you needed, and it was cool. But here it feels like my problem was every planet we go to, every set has to feel – it had to feel like either the Cantina or Jabba's palace, and it was – too overstimulating, and it felt like they felt the need to make every single planet and set
look like that.
And I didn't like that
I
as
agree
much.
With you. None of these new films have been visually distinctive. And,
yeah, exactly.
But I will say this, though. There's one scene in this movie, it's not a spoiler, but there's one location they go to that made me happy. And you know the one I'm talking about, the dancing planet where everyone's dancing.
Yes.
It's just so much fun to look at. I was like, was it this hard? Like, this is Star Wars. Like, that was Star Wars. They're talking, like, what's your name? Like, that was so much. They had puppets and Muppets in the background.
Yeah.
And it was different, and it was fun. And they spent time there. And I was like, I want to live here. I would love to jam with these people. They're all dancing.
Yeah.
It's a culture of dancers.
That one wasn't bad.
They all look like rhinoceri, but I'll do anything for love. So,
yeah.
But no, and then like you said, we're off to this, we're off to the ice planet, we're off to this planet, we're off to this, and individually, would you agree that the individual planets and the locales look great? Like they look fantastic.
They do look good. Yeah, we just don't feel as immersed in it as I think we should.
Yes, exactly. And we're just visiting. It's like if you ever flown a lot and you stop at cities for a minute, or like you're in New Jersey, but you're not in New Jersey. You're in LA. You're not in LA. You know, you're just stopping at the duty free gift shop, and that's about it.
Yeah, like can you really say you've been to New York if you've only been to the airport?
Technically, yes.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, technically. You can.
Yeah, technically, yes, and that's
according to J.J. Abrams, you can.
Yeah, and it's never lived in, like you said. It's the original movies. You know, they seem slow by comparison, but they feel lived in. And
yeah, definitely.
You know, you're in the wood. Well, excuse me, you're in the sand. Then you're in the woods. Then you're in the ice. Then you're in the woods.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's your movie.
And by the way, the characters in the at least Empire and Return of the Jedi, they weren't together. Like the gang wasn't together for a lot of those movies either.
But they had good combinations that made sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They definitely did.
You know, you can't point to them and say, well, you don't like what Han Solo gets frozen in what is it, carbonite?
The carbonite, yeah.
Carbonite, aka the plaster Paris. But
yeah.
But it gets out and it makes sense, and you're in you go to Jabba's palace, and that's so much fun to look at.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much creative stuff happening.
That's the best part of that movie visually.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, people complain or something, but it's fun to look at. There's world building, and for those who don't remember, our favorite movie critic Roger Ebert, when he reviewed Return of the Jedi, he has my favorite piece of movie writing. He talks about the Rancor, that giant monster with the claws and everything, who gets killed. Spoiler for a 35-year-old movie, but he gets killed by Luke Skywalker. And there's that one scene when the door opens, that fat man, that fat, sweaty man, comes out, and he starts crying.
Mm-hmm.
And Roger Ebert basically says, the beauty of Star Wars is that in the world of Star Wars, everybody's loved by somebody. And you feel that. And that's been, to me, that's been missing for a lot of this.
Yeah.
A lot of this, not all. But there was a scene in this movie that had that feeling to me. And it's one of the reasons I like it, I think, a little more than you do, even though it was totally manipulative. I want to be clear. Let's get into spoilers here in a second, because we can't really go any further. So if you haven't seen the movie yet and you're using this podcast as a cheap way to see it, don't do that. Go see the movie and then come back. Pause. But so from here on in, there be spoilers. And because we literally cannot talk about the movie without spoiling it. It's not possible.
Yeah, there's so much. There's so much.
So and I feel bad for calling them spoilers because you can probably predict everything that happens.
Yeah, definitely.
Like right down to dialogue. But
yeah.
But anyway, so they're in the desert. They through a series of complete contrivances and Deus Ex Machinas, they hit the jackpot every single time. They get super lucky. They just happen to find the map that just happens to show the location of an artifact that just happens to be there. And they get chased by the stormtroopers who now have jetpacks. And they are in a big chase, and they just happen to fall at the exact same moment, at the exact same spot with this oily quicksand crud.
Yeah.
And they get sucked down, and that just happened to be at the exact spot they need to be.
What a coincidence.
How lucky. And they,
this
and they,
whole planet.
Like, literally, they didn't even mean to be there. They were traveling past it.
Yeah.
They had no intention of stopping there.
Yeah, I don't know how big... That was Tatooine, right?
Was it Tatooine? Or the dance planet? I forget.
I can't remember. Yeah. But, like, I don't know how big that planet was, but...
Not big enough.
I mean, can imagine landing on Earth and just happening to stumble upon the one place you need to be that'll unlock this key for the entire solar system. It doesn't make any sense,
It makes sense when you are rushing through a script and you got to get it done.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, look at that, the Holy Grail. That's why it's hard. So anyway, and they happen to find the ship they're looking for, and they just happen to find the dagger. But here's the thing, though. They meet this big creature, this big snake creature, and it's menacing, and Rey... Our heroine Rey discovers she has the power to heal. through the force or something. And of course, she connects with the creature. She saves it. And there's a beautiful moment there, and I like that.
Yeah, that was a good one, actually.
Good
I like that, too.
It made me happy. But I was like, I said to myself, she's going to do that to somebody important later on. She's going to heal somebody because we need to know she can do that. And that's what I like about this movie better, is that it sets that up. And in The Last Jedi, people just do new things without any warning. They fly through space. They Mary Poppins. They transport. They flicker around. And it takes you by surprise because it's never hinted at. It's never established. We just make it up as we go along as a surprise.
Yeah.
But no, I think this movie's a little more telegraphing of that, and I appreciated it. And so I like my things pre-chewed. I don't want no surprises in my Star Wars. But anyway, she heals the snake. They get out of there. This old ship still flies. It's still good. And do they fly out of there?
A bunch of ridiculous stuff happens that's not really justified, in my opinion. But yeah, they eventually fly out of there on this ship.
Oh, I remember. So C-3PO can read the dagger because C-3PO knows everything.
Yeah.
But he doesn't
This
care.
Was funny. I like this, actually.
Yeah, because – and apparently Sith is hate speech, and it's been banned. they ban hate speech in the Emperor.
Yeah.
In the Empire.
His programming won't allow him to read it.
It's actually pretty fun.
Yeah, I liked it,
So we got to go there, and we meet the best character in the movie, Boba.
Yeah.
What's his name? Bubba? Boba? Boo-boo?
Yeah, it reminded me – yeah, I kept wanting to say Boba Fett, but it was not that.
Let's just say who he is. He's Salacious Crumb. Can we just say that?
Yeah, basically.
He's Salacious Crumb.
And
he's the worst puppet I've ever seen. He's a terrible puppet, but he's the best character in the movie because he's so much fun because that's Star Wars. He's like, he's just moving around, and he's clearly like a puppet on a string, but he doesn't match anything else aesthetically.
No.
And he just has that weird speak, that speech pattern.
Yeah.
And he's
kind of like a Jar Jar Binks, but more unintelligible.
Like, if Watto wasn't such an anti-Semitic stereotype, it would be like Watto and Salacious Crumb.
Yeah.
But what's his name? Bubba. But this guy should be on toys. This is a great character.
Yeah, he was a good one.
But
he was funny.
But the Muppet was so bad. I loved it. I loved the puppet because you could tell it's a puppet. I don't need to be fooled.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm sorry, I got a puppet fetish.
You mean you don't want a CGI Yoda just flying, doing flips in the air and not looking like a puppet?
Let me put it this way, Ethan. One thing that Baby Yoda from Mandalorian has proven conclusively is that people prefer puppets.
Yep.
They do.
I've been saying it.
They do.
I've been saying it.
We all know this. Yeah. Everybody knows this. Everybody knows this. It's not magic. It's called real. It's called realism.
Yep.
It's the thing. And this Bubba, I wish I knew his name. I'm so sorry. I'm going to look it up, and I'm going to bring it up as we're talking. Oh, Babu. Babu Frick.
Babu, that's what it was, yeah.
Yep. And, you know, voiced by Shirley Henderson from Trainspotting.
Okay.
She played Moaning Myrtle in Harry Potter and the...
Oh.
That crazy woman. Yikes.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm cool. So, anyway, we got Go Babu. You're better than Yoda. Baby Yoda, anyway. Or the child.
Yeah.
So, anyway, they go here. I don't want to give away too much of the plot because... I can't because there's no plot. So anyway, they go there. C-3PO reveals all, leading to me one of the best parts of the movie where he's memory loss.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun. We see was it Carrie Russell who plays?
Yeah, I didn't. I was trying to figure out who it was, and then I saw it in the credits. It was her, and kind of made sense.
Yeah, Carrie Russell, who of course worked with JJ before on was it Felicity? Was it the show?
She was on that. Was JJ, he worked on that show?
I think he did. Let me double check. JJ Abrams and Matt Reeves.
Okay.
Good old JJ making another good, great actress wear a helmet and not show her face.
Yeah.
Again. You know, can't show her face. But anyway, during this time, the return of a beloved character and none other than the man himself, Lando Calrissian.
He was the best. That was the best part of the movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's pretty damn good, and he was so welcome, and his inclusion was great, and he was so great in this movie. Lando's awesome.
Yep.
And he has a lot of great scenes, and he's not in the movie a lot, but he's in enough to matter.
Yeah.
And what he does to me, he's basically, tell me if I'm wrong, I'll spoil it, but I don't want to spoil too much, because I think people need to see this when they see it. He's acting as... He's not the sexy guy. He's not the sex maniac. He's almost like Obi-Wan.
Yeah, he's like a lot wiser. He's been around now. He's seen he's seen his highs and lows, and he's a better person for it, I'm assuming.
And he still has the mustache.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He still has that mustache.
And it reminded me of what a mistake it was to try to recast him in Solo, because Donald Glover ain't got it. I like Donald Glover, but he's not Billy Dee Williams.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. He's just I don't know what I'd call him. I love seeing Lando again, and seeing him and Chewie together again was fantastic. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It worked.
It was really good.
It worked on my nostalgia guard. Let down. It got through. I liked it. I can't help it. So,
yeah.
That's like
speaking of Chewie, we also got kind of a fake out where
yes.
Can we say it?
Okay,
can we say it?
Let's talk about this. Okay, this is a problem in this movie. This is a problem that I had too, but you and I differ on the – I think you and I both agree this is a problem,
yeah.
But we differ on the outcome. So one of many, many things in this movie, like the Emperor, that is never explained is the movie lies to you. And the movie clearly shows Chewie getting into this ship. He's clearly kidnapped by this one ship that's all on the screen, just one ship. It takes off. Rey and Adam Driver, who, by the way, is back, and he's got the helmet on sometimes, but he's back, and they engage in a little force pulling. What would you call it? Tug of war?
Yeah, tug of war.
Tug of war. And Rey... Let's just say Rey has an episode where lightning comes out of her hand and force lightning, and the ship blows up. Boom. Killing Chewbacca.
Yep.
But not really.
Yeah, it was so manipulative.
And it's clearly dead. He's clearly dead. And I'm wondering if the movie very famously went through a bunch of reshoots, and I'm wondering if that's the part they just couldn't figure out, so they just said, eh.
Yeah, like they had him actually die, and then they realized that maybe that wasn't a good idea.
Well, it would make sense because everything has to be dark and explodey and killing, death, kill all the kill, because that was the trajectory of the first two movies is kill all the main characters.
Yeah.
And let's kill Chewbacca. I mean, they killed Admiral Akbar off screen.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think what may have happened is Chewbacca was killed, and during the reshoots they said, we cannot do this, and so we'll resurrect him by just faking it.
Yeah, that was kind of whack to me. I didn't like that.
It's never explained. It's just explained with, he must have been on a different transport ship. No, he wasn't. There was no there was no other ship. It's you liked for example, you like Zombieland 2, right? The movie that came out. And in Zombieland, it's a zombie apocalypse, and they never explain how everything. Well, they never fully explain how everyone had power and how they still had bullets. But you remember they tried in Zombieland 2. He said, "Oh, as long as it rains, the power keeps going."
Yep, exactly.
It doesn't make sense. If you think about it, it doesn't work. But whatever.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about this. Because if I stopped and started to question all the Deus Ex Machinas and all the complete fakeouts, I was going to explode. And that will make sense to you when I tell you why I'm willing to forgive this crass and unintelligent manipulation. And
wow, so, okay.
Yeah, I'm not usually like that. I'll tell you why. So anyway... Chewbacca gets resurrected magically, and so anyway, a lot of intrigue goes on. We're on the ship. Can we just skip it? I think we just skip to at the end. Rey confronts Kylo Ren.
Yeah,
and they discover the location of the fall Death Star, which is right next to Endor, which sounds like fun, but we never quite visit Endor the way you want to.
No way. Yeah.
Although you do see Ewoks.
Yeah, very briefly. You see some Ewoks.
Yep. Just enough to sell toys. And so,
yep.
And teddy bear outfits. I like the Ewoks. I don't care what anybody says.
I do too.
You know, they think they're cute, but if you think about it, these are savage man-eaters who are going to eat the heroes, and they're bashing on skulls, and they commit murder.
Yeah.
They're not cute. They're murderers.
And they worship C-3PO.
They worship C-3PO. They're a primitive society who somehow... have a brass band and can play complex musical notes.
it's so weird. I never thought of it like that, I guess. But yeah.
But they took the Nup Nup song out. And by the way, I was going to say, there's a little trivia for that. I read about this. Do you know who wrote the Nup Nup song in Return of the Jedi before it was banished?
Carole King.
I wish. No, John Williams wrote it, right? And
okay.
John Williams has a son who's also... in what is his name? I want to get it for you. I'm going to get it for you. I should have had this done. That's how good I am as an editor. His son, I want to say, is in the band Toto.
Really?
The Rains of Africa. So apparently he wrote this song, he wrote the Nup Nup song with his father.
Huh.
And it was
pretty cool.
And it was replaced by this synthetic music in the special editions, which I actually like quite a bit, actually.
Yeah.
But that's just me. But I love the Nup Nups song. Anyway, enough Nup Nups. Enough Nup Nups. And if I'm wrong about the Toto thing, but I have heard that it was he's the son of one of those bands.
Yeah.
I think Rains in Africa. I'll have to get it for you. Oh, God, I want that to be true so bad.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Just like Wilford Brimley. And by the way, that folks, that's called a callback. So anyway, they're going to the planet. They fight. Big lightsaber scene. If you've seen Revenge of the Sith, you kind of have an idea what it looks like, except it's not lava, it's water.
Mm-hmm.
This happens. Our hero, our villain, Kylo Ren, gets stabbed because, and this is cheap, Leia decides to communicate from across the galaxy and use up her force power, and you never really see her. Like they ran out of footage, I think.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
And so we cover her with a veil, and this is not going to mean a lot to anybody, but it might mean to you. Did you ever see the movie Game of Death?
No.
Okay.
I haven't.
Game of Death was supposed to be the second movie from Bruce Lee, his American movie. Even if you haven't seen it, it's the famous one where he's in the yellow jumpsuit and he's fighting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay,
yeah.
Very famous because he shot like 8 minutes of footage and then he died. So
okay, that was the one that they released after he died, okay.
Yeah, so they didn't have a movie. So what they did is they had to reconstruct a movie around it using body doubles and fake shots. And at one point, there's a scene when the fake Bruce Lee is sitting in a chair, and they just tape a picture of Bruce Lee's face on the mirror. And
amazing.
Yeah. It's not quite as bad as that, but sometimes it's a little awkward because a friend of mine, actually one of our editors pointed out, the footage isn't always in focus, and they're doing their best to make it look like Carrie Fisher's there. They're doing their best, but it just, I don't know. It just doesn't work for me. It just doesn't feel right. It feels exploitive.
Yeah, it does. And also because it leads to the stabbing, which ends up not even doing anything, really. But
yeah, you could barely tell it was the stabbing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, I guess it does move things forward, the character development-wise. Uh-huh. As for, you know, Kylo Ren realizes that, you know, this girl is she kind of shows him love, you know, in a way that he wasn't really expecting.
And I think that was handled pretty good. It wasn't, I love you, you're hot, take your shirt off
again.
I know I told you to put a shirt on, but nah, keep it off. I gotta see that pasty white body.
Yeah.
You know, that pasty white body with no musculature.
You got it,
Makes me hot for your weird-looking face. So, I'm sorry, I love Adam Driver, but come on. He looks like he could be an alien. So, I'm sorry, you know, you all thinking it. Nobody's not thinking that. Nobody.
Yeah. I do like Adam Driver, though.
No, he's a great actor. And by the way, can we just say, you agree with me? I think he and Daisy Ridley are better in this movie than any of the others.
Together? I did like them in the last movie. I liked them in The Last Jedi, too.
Yeah, that
was
interesting.
Yeah, better than the first movie. I think that was maybe one – that was the weakest part of The Force Awakens is their dynamic.
Yeah, and it has, I think, good resolution that it's completely predictable and 100%, but they're not brother and sister, let's just say that. They're not brother and sister. There is some smooching, but it's respectful, and I just think because he's become such a better actor.
He's a good actor, yeah.
He's become very, very good, and I think he's going to literally be a force to be reckoned with.
Mm-hmm. There you go. No, I agree.
See what I did?
He was in like, yeah, that was good.
It was a bad joke.
Yeah. He was in like 5 movies this year, and they were all received fairly well. I don't know about Don Quixote. Oh, that one is pretty good.
He was also in that Jim Jarmusch zombie movie, which was
that one was not good. Actually, I didn't like that movie.
Did you see
one
it? It's
cut
terrible.
Or not One Cut of the Dead. Dead Don't Die.
No, The Dead Don't Die, and
which
is funny because Bill Murray was in 2 zombie movies this year. Think about that.
That's
Think
true.
About that for a second.
Yeah,
Bill Murray. And
he's found his calling.
Zombie parodies. And if Ghostbusters would have come out, he would have been in 2.5. So, anyway, so we're going into this. So a big fight ensues, and they meet the Emperor. We finally meet the Emperor full blood. The Emperor is teased. The Emperor is not revealed, by the way. He's in the whole movie. He's throughout the whole movie. And let's just talk about this for a second. Yeah, he's dead. He shouldn't be in this movie. We could argue it, but he's here, okay?
Yeah.
If you can't argue a train, you can't argue a car accident and say it shouldn't have happened after it's happened. It's happened. Yeah, exactly. You got to deal with the aftermath. He's in this movie. Deal with it. So I think they dealt pretty well. I'm going to tell you something. I was really impressed with the Emperor in this movie. I didn't expect to like him as much as I did. I don't know if it's because Ian McDiarmid is awesome. He's fatter, but he's still awesome. Yeah. But he looks gross. He's disgusting.
He's pretty gross.
And he's basically kept alive, and he's attached to this giant machine, and he's like a skeletal nothing. His fingers are all gone, gnarled off. Gross face. Looks like he's got venereal disease. It just looks terrible.
I will say this movie is, I think, hands down the darkest Star Wars movie.
Oh yeah,
it's almost too dark at some points.
It's
especially
pretty spooky. It got creepy.
Especially these scenes with Palpatine and the Sith planet and all that whole like ominous group of Sith lords who are just worshiping him inexplicably. But
that's a word you're going to hear a lot. It's not explained either.
Yeah,
like the ships, like the armada of ships that he designed to take over the universe that can each kill, that each have a Death Star built in. None of it's explained. Nothing's
weird.
Explained.
It's weird.
Say what you will about Attack of the Clones, they went into detail how the clones were made.
Yeah.
And he visited the planet, and it was kind of cool. Like, that. Say what you will about Attack of the Clones, Attack of the Clones had a story.
Yeah.
No, I could go off all day. I just want to say this. The Emperor's gross, but the visuals and the sound design is tremendously good. In fact, I got to tell you this. I don't think I've ever heard better sound design in a movie.
Yeah, it was good, I will say.
Like, everything. The voice modulation was amazing. It was genuinely creepy. Genuinely creepy. The sound that the Force lightning made when it was creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera angles and the lightning, it's scary. It's genuinely scary for a Star Wars movie. And it's frightening, as it should be. He's the damn Emperor.
Yeah.
He looks like a little old man, but he's scary.
Yeah, he's really scary. When I was a kid, that was the one thing in these movies that freaked me out the most was in Return of the Jedi, just the whole thing with Palpatine.
Which we'll get into. But you remember him from his last appearance was technically, I mean, not chronologically, but as an actor, was in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, that was his last one.
When he played the senator, and Samuel Jackson's pimpy purple lightsaber turned him into to Monster Mash.
Yep.
And he looked like Jell-O on his face. He didn't look scary. He looked like a wet rag.
Yeah.
And he was just ridiculous looking. But
yeah, that was one of the best scenes of that movie, too. Yeah, I like that justification for why he looks so bizarre.
Revenge of the Sith was the best of the prequels, story-wise, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I don't think it was the most visually entertaining. I think I actually have a soft spot for Phantom Menace quite a bit.
I do, too. Yeah, I like that movie.
I won't stand for it. I mean, you could say it's a bad movie, but people remember it.
Yeah, definitely.
People are going to be talking about Phantom Menace in ways that 100, like, they won't be talking about 100 Oscar winners.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
And to me, that's, we're getting into why I like this movie. And so,
okay.
Long story short, you know how it ends. The Emperor has to die, but how he dies is we have an inversion. Instead of father and son, instead of twins, we now have, can we say it? I'll let you say it. Who is Rey?
She is the granddaughter of Palpatine.
Granddaughter. We never knew he had a son. It's never mentioned, never seen. But
can you imagine Emperor Palpatine just, you know, raising a little boy?
Can you imagine
playing catch with him?
Can you imagine getting it on with that?
Oh man,
like that doesn't make sense. What would make sense? And I think they missed. Like, I'm sorry. I know, ladies, you're desperate, but no, God no.
Yeah, no, not Palpatine. Please.
Either, I mean, I know you like men in power, but like, do the robes turn you on? Like,
Go for Jar Jar Binks instead, you know?
Jar Jar Binks would be an improvement.
Yeah.
At least he'll be there for you. But no,
exactly.
This guy just shows up. He's a hologram. He dies for 30 years. He went out for a pack of cigarettes. He didn't come back. But no, they never explain it. It's just made up. They just make it up. And which is sad because they had all the ingredients. I'm going to say it. The midichlorians come back.
Yep.
They don't call them midichlorians, but that's what they are. So apparently Rey, as the granddaughter of Palpatine, the Sith, and Ben, a.k.a. Kylo Ren, who's now good with a shirt on, is the grandson of Darth Vader, both are just stacked with midichlorians.
Yeah.
And so the Emperor juices them, Dark Crystal style, juices them for power, which he does. He totally juices them. He gets their essence, and he turns him into it rejuvenates him like a Skeksi. And he's slightly less gross, but he's still gross.
Slightly.
Slightly. Yeah. That's like going from a 10 to a 9.
Yeah.
And it's like putting lipstick on a pig.
Exactly.
I still don't want to kiss it. So anyway, how do we say this? So Kylo, Ben, we just call him Ben now, gets thrown into a chasm, but like we've established, chasms don't kill anybody. So he climbs out. Rey is super powerful. She's got lightsabers. She obliterates Palpatine, turns him into dust, and she dies.
Yeah.
And we all know it's coming. Take it away. What happens? How does Rey come back? Because she comes back.
I believe, I'm trying to remember now. It was also so much, so many things happening. Well, Kylo Ren comes back.
Is he Kylo Ren or Ben now?
Or like, Ben? Yeah, Ben comes back.
Oh, and why?
Yeah, because
let's stop. Let's stop. Yeah. Why is he no longer Kylo Ren? Let's just say it. What transforms him from badass Kylo Ren back to good old Ben? What could possibly do it? What surprises did this movie have?
Well, you know, you could say that it was the his soulmate, Rey.
Yeah.
Saves him and she shows him love,
or you could say who shows up as a memory.
Oh yeah, that's right. a lot of people show up, but Han Solo apparently can force ghost.
He could force, or he's a memory, but they never explain.
Yeah,
but he fell down a chasm too, and he might have, and the planet exploded, but no, we get it back. He's like, what is it? How do they explain it? He's like, you're a memory. He's like, yeah, but I'm your
memory. It's basically, I think they just explain it like it's Kylo Ren's just memory, remembering his dad and like what his dad would say in that situation kind of thing.
But it's heavily implied. It's forcey a little bit.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, it's definitely just an excuse to see Harrison Ford. And I'm not complaining because I love Harrison Ford.
Can I just say, though, very good scene, by the way.
Yeah.
Very emotional. Probably the most emotional scene in the movie, except for another scene coming up. But
yeah.
And let's just say Harrison Ford looks pretty good. He looks like he doesn't want to be there, but he looks emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because he doesn't want to be there. He's got the line, and he calls back to, was it Emperor or Return of the Jedi, when the one of the most famous scenes in the original trilogy, when, you know, Princess Leia says, I love you. And Han Solo says, I know.
I know, yeah, the end of right before he's going to go in the Carbonite in Empire Strikes Back.
And that scene is recalled, and it's emotional, and it's earned, and I think it's a good scene, and it's nice seeing Harrison Ford show up.
Yeah.
And that's the power, and it's good. It's a good scene, and Adam Driver sells it. He's not Hayden Christensen, people. He's a good actor.
No. Yeah, definitely not.
And so,
Hayden Christensen.
The power of love and magic, I think, restores Rey. They never quite show, he never does the Force thing, but she just comes back to life. And they smooch.
Yeah.
And he dies. Ben dies.
Yeah.
And he doesn't come back. And all the while, the Emperor, I mean, it looks like the rebels are going to lose, but guess who shows up to save the day? Who is it? Who shows up?
Yeah,
while this is all going on, and Monster Mash and Palpatine gets obliterated and all this force and stuff goes on, up in the sky, you have the Armada coming, and they're attacking.
Yeah.
And it's so convoluted. It's just fun to watch. But and all is lost because no one shows up until
Lando.
Lando shows up. That's right.
Yeah.
Using the power. He's like, you got Lando. That's the problem. Just, they didn't have Lando asking him last time. Lando did it. Can we just cut to the chase? The good guys win.
Yeah, of course.
Lots of action happens. Lots of things. What'd you think, by the way, when General Leia died? And you had that scene with Chewie. What do you think of that?
Yeah, at the very end with Chewie.
Yeah.
That was the part that I got the most misty-eyed when Chewie kind of expresses his sadness for Princess Leia's death.
I love that. Expresses his sadness.
Yeah, he does his Wookiee thing, you know?
It's really sad, though. It's emotional.
It is sad, yeah. It is emotional. That's the most emotional part, I think, in the movie.
And you wouldn't have had that.
I didn't really... What's that?
You wouldn't have had that if he had died.
Exactly, and I don't. Maybe that's what they realized, or maybe they just wanted to manipulate our emotions.
No, it's total. It's total manipulation.
Yeah.
And now we get to the part why I like the movie, and then we can discuss a little bit, and we can close this up.
Yeah.
So I did. I left one scene out, and on purpose. So guess who else comes back? That's right, Luke Skywalker.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
Yep, he's a
Force
ghost.
About that.
So Rey's having a hissy fit. She burns it. She doesn't know what's going on. It all is lost. She throws her lightsaber yet again, like Luke. She throws it in the fire. Who catches it in the fire? Luke Skywalker. And this is not the Luke Skywalker of the last movie. This is the Luke Skywalker that I think fans wanted in the last movie. This is a mature, confident Obi-Wan. But as we learn, maybe a little more like Yoda, because he tells Rey that she needs to basically suck it up, Buttercup. She needs to do this. All the Jedi live in her. He gives a great emotional speech. He looks pretty, you know, he doesn't do much, but he talks. And then he does the greatest thing in this movie. My favorite scene. This is what redeemed it for me. This one scene did it for me. You ready? This one thing. All is forgiven. Mm-hmm. And I call this my Optimus Prime, because you like Shia LaBeouf. So,
love him, yeah.
So Transformers 1, a lot of stuff wrong with that movie.
Yeah.
One thing was not wrong in this movie. They got Peter Cullen to do Optimus Prime. You get Peter Cullen to do Optimus Prime, I will forgive almost anything else. Once. Yeah. This movie, and this is where you and I differ. I hated The Last Jedi. I hated it with the force of a thousand suns.
Yeah, I know you did.
And I do not think I'm alone. And I think, despite the world of journalists talking about racists and white supremacists and fanboys, they didn't get it. They didn't understand. There seems to be, let me tell you the long way, and then you tell me if I'm wrong or crazy, and which you would be wrong by doing. But there was such goodwill for The Force Awakens, unparalleled. I've never seen anything like it. There was so much anticipation. The movie is still, by the way, the highest earning movie in American history. Still. Yeah. Even with Endgame, it couldn't beat it. And I think most people came away from Force Awakens generally happy.
Yeah.
There are a lot of complaints afterwards about it's the same. But we were so happy to have these characters back and the music back and being in the world. It stuck the landing, but it didn't crash. That was okay. It was an introduction to the world of Star Wars again. It worked. I don't think it's one of the greatest Star Wars movies, but it wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
And then The Last Jedi happened. And for all this talk of subversion and for all this talk of subverting expectations and we're going to introduce new things, there's a lot to like about Last Jedi, but that's like being given a steak, and the steak is great by a new avant-garde chef who does fusion, and he's great, and you say, this steak is so good. What's in it, people? Yuck. And even though it tastes good, you can't get the taste of people out of your mouth, and that's what Last Jedi was. It was people. Soylent Green. Because you take the one thing of Star Wars and you turn it on its head, and that is you reverse the outcome of Return of the Jedi. Star Wars is not real. These are not real people. It's a fairy tale. And it works because it doesn't play with reality. And when you take Luke Skywalker, a man who, you mentioned this in Return of the Jedi, who stood up to the Emperor, stood up to Darth Vader, unparalleled goodness, went from naive to good. That was his arc, right? Stood up to Darth Vader, didn't kill Darth Vader, stood up, was getting killed by the Emperor until Darth Vader took the Emperor and threw his ass down the chasm where he exploded and died, so we think, and he was a Jedi, remember? You failed, Your Highness. I'm a Jedi like my father before me.
Yeah.
He went from that of lightness and goodness, protecting his sister, to wanting to kill a child. And I get he wants to become grumpy and all this, but it's not, I don't need that sort of realness. It felt wrong to me. It's like your uncle who you really like, but you don't like sitting on his lap for some reason.
Oh, wow.
It's just, it didn't feel right. Like the Christmas card's not worth it, you know?
Yeah. See, this is, I'm gonna say how I interpret it.
No, that's fine. This is why we differ. You're wrong, but we differ.
So here's the thing with me and Luke's trajectory, especially in Last Jedi. So I like to think of it as, you know, well, first of all, in Return of the Jedi, you remember at the end, like, the reason why he actually defeats Vader, in a sense, is because he does let he does give into hate briefly. He gives into that hate, and he ends up, you know, using his anger, and then he starts... And that's kind of what helps him get over that hump.
He won the fight. So we're clear. He won the fight.
Yeah, he won the fight. Yeah. But because the anger kind of took him over the edge, and I like to think of him giving into that anger kind of – because there always has to be a balance, right, with Vader. Mm-hmm. As long as Vader's alive, there has to be a balance. So I like to think of it as him as Luke giving into that anger gave way for Vader to kind of balance on the other end and kind of – show his good side a little bit.
That's called the Judas effect. Like, if you're a Christian, you cannot curse Judas because Judas sets the things in motion.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Judas is essential. So you can't blame Judas because Judas doesn't have control over his fate, because without Judas and his, what is it, 40 pounds of, what is it?
I don't remember the number, but yeah, there wouldn't be salvation, right?
Please don't strike me down, Jesus. Yeah. But no, without Judas, there's no crucifixion. And so,
yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
So, so, Yeah, so,
so that's how I like to see it. So to me, it's I don't see it as totally out of Luke's character. Also, you know, this is 30 years into the future. I mean, he's seen a lot. Like, he's been through a lot. I mean, he might see have a different perspective about life, and maybe, you know, that was him. I mean, he was what, 25, maybe in the universe of Return of the Jedi.
It was a rough 25, but
a rough 25, but. I don't know. I like to think that maybe it's just, you know, 30 years later and he just has a different perspective. And to him, he sees Kylo Ren as being like, you know, this guy might be the undoing, or he might be even more evil than Vader or Palpatine or whatever.
I agree with you completely. But I think if I were doing it, my thing was Kylo Ren, his turn to the dark side would have been inevitable. And Luke would blame himself for not stopping it. And I don't think it had to manifest with, like, holding a lightsaber over a child.
Yeah.
And I just...
It could have probably been done in a
different I think your system works as a realistic film. I think your way makes sense as a tragedy. But but in the world of Star Wars and fantasy, I think we need those... We don't need so many shades of gray. I think it could have been done more effervescently. I think it could have been handled different because we're not talking about real people. And I think... Ryan Johnson's a great filmmaker, but he's more cerebral than George Lucas. George Lucas draws in crayons that you can see, and Ryan Johnson is drawing in penmanship.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
And again, I don't think you're wrong. I'm just saying for me, for a lot of us, Luke Skywalker is the greatest movie character of all time. And it felt a betrayal a little bit. It undid the satisfaction of that moment.
I mean, I totally get why people have a problem with it. And I totally understand.
You know who
that,
else
especially...
agrees? You know who else doesn't agree? Mark Hamill didn't like it.
Yeah, I know. He especially. I think that's kind of what the thing that got one of the things that got the ball rolling in this whole like fan displeasure with the Rise of the Jedi.
And I don't think a lot of critics quite understand that when you're not playing in your own trilogy, you're playing within confines. And I think a skilled filmmaker understands the limitations of not only the medium, but understands the limitations of the story, and you work within it. If I go to Pizza Hut and I say, give me a pepperoni pizza, and you come back with a salad, that's great, but I ordered a damn pizza.
Yeah.
And it just was – and if I don't think – I think – The Last Jedi felt like the end of a trilogy. It did not feel like the middle part. It felt like the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have liked to see Rian Johnson do his own thing.
Me too.
But when you – and here we come to my favorite scene in this movie, and it redeemed the whole thing for me. It actually makes – I'm going to be honest with you, Ethan. Rise of Skywalker is my favorite of the three. And I'll tell you why. And I'll tell you why. It's total manipulation, okay? It's totally manipulation. It's like if my car gets hit, and I don't have to fight with the insurance company, and they just give me the money. It's bad, but it could have been worse. And so here's what redeemed it.
Okay.
Luke becomes Yoda. Luke says, Rey, you need a ship. So what does he do? He does a Yoda. Remember that ship in Last Jedi? He pulls that crap out of the water, like Yoda, and the same music from Return of the Jedi comes in, and you know what's on Luke's face? A smile. He is grinning. He's like, that's right. This is the Luke Skywalker you wanted. Here it is, baby. Come and get it. Luke is smiling. He's smiling. He's having a good time. And that, to me, is redemption. And if I can just go to the end, another thing, and total manipulation. My favorite scene in any movie of all time, I'm older than you, so my favorite scene in any movie of all time is the scene in the original Star Wars where Luke Skywalker feels dejected. He wants to go out and get some power, you know, he wants to go to Tashi Station, get some power converters and get his, you know, and who knows what goes on there, scum and villainy. And he's bored and he's just a farm boy and he looks into the sun and we get the binary sunset.
Oh yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, and clearly everyone loves that scene because it's been recycled at least 10 times. It's recycled here. So, final scene, correct me if I'm wrong, Rey at the end of things, everybody's celebrating, Rey decides to go to Tatooine. She sees the Jawas, we hear the Ootingi! You know, in case you forgot, the Jawas exist, those little bastards. And she goes to the original, whatever the hell you call it, the original hovel, where Aunt Beru and Uncle Ben were charred to death.
Oh, yeah.
And it's still there.
Yeah, I know. Well, because no one lives there except them.
Who wants to live in a sand pit?
Yeah.
It's no ceiling. But it's a cave. It's like Flintstones. Anyway, she goes there, and she cleans it up a little bit, and she buries... is she burying Ben there Is that the in the lightsabers?
No, she's burying the lightsabers.
She's burying the lightsabers, and this.
I don't know where they did they bury Ben there.
No,
too?
No, no, he didn't because he evaporated.
Oh, he just yeah, that's right. He just
he pulled a Yoda.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Apparently, he went back to the light side. So anyway, so she's burying the lightsabers, and this old lady comes by and she's like, "No one's been living here a while," which I loved. He's like, "What's your name?" And you know what's coming. She's like, "Right." Yeah. And then she looks out in the distance, and who's there? Luke and Leia.
Yeah.
Force ghosts. And she says, "Rey Skywalker." You know, and then she goes and she looks into the distance, and what is she looking at? The binary sunset. And then, get it? The symbolism. Two suns. The twins.
Yep.
Ah, look at that manipulation. But you know what?
Yes.
It totally worked on me. And
yeah, I do like the call. I mean, I do like the call. I'm a sucker for callbacks. Star Wars is one of my favorite movies of all time. The whole original trilogy. But yeah, I do like that. I liked the scene, but it was just at that point I was just so frustrated. I would have rather have been frustrated with Return of the Jedi. I mean, Return of the Jedi, The Last Jedi, because you know, it was the second movie, but this was the closure. I wanted to like this one more than I wanted to like The Last Jedi.
Can we be clear though? The binary sunset was also the final scene in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, that's true.
Which we thought was the last Star Wars movie. So
yeah.
So again, it worked on me. It didn't work on me like, "Oh my god, that's so satisfying." It worked on me like I would rather have this than something else. And people forget Return of the Jedi ended with Ewoks dancing.
Yep.
You know, it didn't.
And you see the Force ghosts though.
And you see the Force ghosts. The Return of the Jedi is a perfect movie ending. It is probably the most like I would say the only other movie that comes close to Return of the Jedi is maybe Terminator 2.
Oh, that's such a good ending, yeah.
You know, like movies that are so satisfying, you earned it. This is perfection. And we found that this year with, speaking of Terminator, where they went back with Dark Fate and they redid it and they undid the ending. They went back and killed John Connor. You know, you guys got to stop it. You guys got to leave these memories alone. Just stop it.
Yeah.
And
that's kind of where I was at with this whole sequel trilogy is I liked Force Awakens a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, because I was like, I'm curious where this is going. Obviously, they kind of duplicated and recycled story lines from the original. But at the same time, I was excited to see where this new story was going to, because I just love Star Wars and I love going back to that world and, you know, seeing how much the universe expands within that world. So, The Last Jedi came, and I liked that too. I didn't hate it. There, obviously, I didn't like it as much as Force Awakens, but I liked it. I understood where I liked that Rian Johnson took chances, took risks for better or worse, right?
No, exactly. No, I appreciate the experimentation, but I knew when I saw he was the only credited writer, For me, I just don't feel he was the right fit for this movie.
Well, here's the thing. Lawrence Kasdan co-wrote Force Awakens, and he wrote Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Rian Johnson was the only writer for Last Jedi. But the writers for Rise of the Skywalker, other than J.J. Abrams, was Chris Terrio. And he wrote Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, and the Justice League movie. So both of those movies I hate.
I didn't know
that until after.
Two things, though. It makes you wonder because you look at the director of Empire Strikes Back and Lawrence Kasdan, and nothing these people have ever done before or since were as good as that.
Yeah. Of course.
And I love RoboCop, too. But
yeah.
Lawrence Kasdan followed up Star Wars with, you know, Never Say Never Again.
Yeah. you can make a case that he just understood the world of Star Wars or what George Lucas was going for. I mean, George Lucas obviously did the story.
That's the thing. I don't
–
everybody wants – It's the Thomas Edison thing, okay? People look at Edison, oh, he created the light bulb, he created the movie. And then you get the skeptic who says, he didn't create anything, he stole them. That's not true.
Yeah.
People say that about Steve Jobs. He didn't invent the PC, but he initiated it. You get these creative people, you just put a creative person by themselves, and they need guidance, they need structure. They're not going to come up with something, but you have a good manager, you have a good editor who can guide the person.
Yeah.
You get magic. And by the way, same with Lucas himself. When he had unfettered access to his own movies, it didn't turn out very well.
Yeah.
He had nobody there to say no.
Well, Well, look at Walt Disney and Roy Disney. Like, Walt Disney was a creative, and then Roy Disney was the businessman who marketed all this stuff and kind of kept him in line.
I'll go you one better. Here's a little secret history that a lot of people don't know, and they should. And you see this happen a lot throughout stories, like really great stories. You know, again, we just said Lucas and Kasdan. We saw Steve Jobs and, like, Johnny Ives. But with Disney, you had Ub Iwerks.
Yeah.
And Ub Iwerks was the talent. The guy who did Mickey Mouse. He did the animation. Mm-hmm. And Walt Disney couldn't draw his way out of a paper bag. But he had vision. And Lucas, whatever you think of him, had vision.
Yeah.
And that vision is not in these movies. It is
he had the premeditation. I mean, he might not have had every plot point down to a T, but he knew where the overall story arc was going to go in the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy. I'm pretty sure
he tinkered with it. Like, he did the same thing. He flubbed. He clearly didn't know they were sister and brother. He clearly didn't know Darth Vader was the father, but he made it work because of smart, clever writing, and you bought it.
I'm willing to bet that the people behind this sequel trilogy, I don't even know if they knew where the second or third movie was going to go. I mean, obviously they didn't, because they had completely different writers and story buys in every single one. But
it was I think it's this, Ethan. I think it's this, and I think it's pretty obvious. Colin Trevorrow was supposed to do this film, and he's credited on the But he was fired, like all Disney people fired Star Wars people, because of the Book of Henry. Remember, Colin Trevorrow is the director and, I believe, writer of Jurassic World.
Yep.
And what happened was, he was hired to do Episode 9. Then he came out, then he was given carte blanche, and he did his own movie, The Book of Henry, which is a disaster, but it's a beautiful disaster. It's something different. It's not a good movie, but it's watchable. It's not a good movie. It's watchable, though. It's different. And Kathleen Kennedy and Disney fired him. They said, we can't have this.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean, look at the people who directed. I mean, Irvin Kershner, he didn't really do anything of notability before he did Empire, and look how that turned out, you know? Apparently Lucas wanted, like, David Lynch or something.
It was Lynch.
Something, right? And Cronenberg. He asked both of them. But I mean, he obviously ended up with Kershner, and I think it was an amazing decision. But he took a chance
on
this director who most people hadn't heard of.
And who's the third? Who's the third director? He only directed like two things.
I know. I'm trying to remember his name. I can't.
And he died. He died after the film. And he wanted Spielberg. Spielberg was his first choice.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, and that would have been so amazing.
There's a lot of evidence. I don't know if you heard this, that Spielberg has directed parts of Star Wars. Like, he worked.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
He worked on. But again. You wrote about this in your review, but Lucas has a history of not giving to you-know-whats about the SAG and the guilds.
Yeah.
And so because of that, it restricts who he can work with. And so I believe Spielberg directed some of the action sequences in Revenge of the Sith. And there's a lot of evidence to suggest that Disney basically went on their hands and knees and asked Lucas to help salvage this movie. And that he was spotted on set, and he probably had input on it. And so, he definitely did that with Solo.
Solo was a mess too. I mean, at least production wise, but I liked it.
Yeah, Solo was a fun movie I actually think Solo did the chance taking better than Last Jedi, and I'll explain why. Because Solo showed inside the city. It did bad things. It did a lot of bad things, but it explored things from a different perspective.
Yeah,
and it didn't have to corrupt characters to get there.
Yeah, and if you look at it at face value, I mean, it was entertaining, it was fun.
I had fun.
I mean, I didn't love some of the casting choices, but the guy who played Solo was pretty good. Yeah,
He didn't look good at first, but he was okay.
Yeah.
But no, going back to that, though, going back once more, Woody Harrelson, I love you, but you're in like 100 movies. So he's going to be
I can never keep track of if Woody Harrelson's in a movie or not. I just assume he is always.
I kind of like Woody Harrelson, so I'm not going to.
I love Woody Harrelson. Yeah,
God, man, you're bald. Don't wear wigs. We all know you're bald. But no. But going back to it, we're not going to like reopen any old wounds. But I think, regardless if you like Last Jedi or liked or loved Rise of the Skywalker, I think we can all say, I think everybody agrees, this is it for this.
Yeah, I mean, there were plans of Rian Johnson having his own trilogy, which
haven't heard anything.
I don't know what's going to happen with it now, but I mean, that was the plan before this movie came out. And I mean, the opening, or, you know, the preview screeners and stuff, people were not happy with it, myself included. But there are people since then, since yesterday when it actually released, that have liked it. But so, I mean, who knows? I don't mind the fan service in Force Awakens, but I think when you the J.J. Abrams course correcting this time kind of overshadows the whole movie. And for me, like, I didn't have a problem with the first two movies, but I do have a problem with not acknowledging the last movie at all.
I will say,
and that's my biggest takeaway.
I kind of disagree with you a little bit, and I'll tell you why. Because I do think it acknowledged certain things. For example, this movie had flashbacks, like The Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
This movie had certain elements, and I think some of that carried over, like the idea that we could play a little with narrative, because the original Star Wars movies had no flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think there was a little and it had that awful scene with the creatures they ride, which made no sense at all. Those things were just there to be toys.
Yeah.
But no, I think final thoughts. I didn't like The Last Jedi because it made me feel that it made me question things. And maybe that's the purpose. It made me question Star Wars. But I don't think Star Wars needs to be questioned. I don't think everything needs to be fleshed out. And I think the problem I've had with these movies, Ethan, is that they feel like fan service. They feel like fan fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And in your review, you said you felt no magic for this. There were sprinkles of magic for me, but all of that magic sprinkle came from acknowledgement of what came before.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I agree with you there.
But yeah, I think the magic is done.
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, I haven't watched The Mandalorian yet. I was going to wait till all the episodes are released. I think like the 27th of this month of December, I think, is the last episode for the season. But
I think
have you watched it yet?
No, I like to binge. But
yeah,
but,
same.
But I'll tell you this though. There were parts. Final thoughts about Star Wars: Rise of Skywalker. I liked it more than I thought I would. But I fully acknowledge, hand on heart, I fully acknowledge it's because it didn't derail the way I thought it would. It didn't go for the cheap kill like the Marvel movies do. The Marvel movies are, we need you to cry, let's kill somebody you love.
Yeah.
I think they tried, and I think they pulled back. I think it's pretty obvious this movie was reshot, and the unnecessary deaths were pulled. And I think at the end of the day, Star Wars, it should be about what's possible and not what's restrictive. And because these are fairy tales, these are a fantasy. This is a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. I get my pathos from Dostoevsky or Dickens or someone else. With Star Wars, I just want to believe. And this movie gave me a smidge, but the smidge is an echo and a vesper from 30-something years ago. It's not from this movie.
Yeah.
So I stayed for the whole credits just to hear John Williams' music play one last time.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt, okay, I'm done. I didn't hate it. I'm happy to talk with you about it. If you paid for me to go, I'd go again. And that's something I did not say about Last Jedi. So what about you? Final thoughts.
It was pretty obvious that I wasn't a huge fan of this movie. There were little things that I did like, or like you said, actually.
Sprinkles.
I loved it. Yeah, when he resurrected the X-Wing, that was pretty cool. You know, that last moment with Chewie was cool. Mm-hmm. But overall, I mean, honestly, regardless of fitting into the universe, I just thought that the story itself was just confusing and convoluted and overstuffed. Yeah, and that, even regardless of it being a Star Wars movie or fitting into the universe, if I just watched this as a one-off and if it all made sense, or if it was, you know, a start and a middle and a beginning, middle and end, I would have said that is so confusing. They tried to fit so many plot points into one movie. But as a Star Wars fan, I wanted to like this so badly, and I thought I would. And I'm the type of guy who, I'm easy to please when it's a, you know, if it's a franchise that I love. Like I like the prequel trilogies, and I like the two movies before this one. But I wanted to love this so bad. I wanted to like it at least. And I just did not – I didn't feel like I could say that I liked this movie. It just was – I don't like feeling like they tried to fix things. I want to just know where the story from the last movie would have – how it would have progressed naturally, not how it would have progressed with people taking in, you know, feedback from fans necessarily.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Like I said, I don't disagree with any of your criticisms. I'm just a sucker for well layered on nostalgia, but I think we can both agree on one thing though, is that having grown up with the prequels, which I'm sure you did more than the originals, mm-hmm. like as new things, people talked about George Lucas stole my childhood. George Lucas, George Lucas.
Yeah.
But I think we all have more respect for him now. I think even the naysayers say look back and say, Lucas, for all his faults, he's an auteur. He's something else.
Yeah.
He had something, and you'll miss it when he's gone, and I think you did. And I think, you know, if you look back at the prequels, you had ridiculous things. Like you had a 50s diner in Attack of the Clones.
Yep.
You had horrible dialogue, like sand, it gets everywhere.
Horrible acting.
And horrible acting, everybody. But here's the thing, though. But we know those characters. Like, say what you will about the prequels, but you know them. You know the characters. Yeah. It's quotable. There's good characters. The music is outstanding. I think the music in the prequels is the best Star Wars music.
It's good, yeah.
Yeah, it's each movie has a theme, and the movies make sense cohesively, and there is a story there, and you do see a progression from this to that, and that's completely absent in these movies. Mm-hmm. It's just not there. And I think this movie tried to return to that, like you said, course correct. Like I said, the biggest compliment I'll give you is I went into this movie praying that I didn't hate it. And I got my prayer. My prayers were answered. But I'll
that's
say
good.
This.
Yeah.
But
that's good.
It makes me believe that under the right hands, under the right time and circumstance, perhaps Star Wars can be Star Wars again.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's going to happen. Maybe it's time to let it go for a while. Maybe it's time to lay dormant like it was for a while and, you know, go make 100 more Marvel movies.
Sure.
You know, go make 1,000 more Marvel movies, and each one will make $1 billion.
I'd be happy with more prequel movies. I like the couple that we've gotten pretty good, and
yeah,
I just like knowing, you know, what, like, the backstories of characters. I don't necessarily need new like the future for the characters we have, but I like knowing where they came from at least.
Yeah, but I don't need to see like the mysteries behind Solo's dice. You know?
Oh yeah, I got you. Yeah.
Like I want to see new things. I want to see new things, and I think The Mandalorian, which I haven't seen, I think satisfies some of that when you have characters like Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
Like it shows that it's still capable of producing stuff like that, and so.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we can all agree, like whether you liked the movie or didn't like the movie, I think we all agree that it's concluded and let it rest.
Yeah, please.
Whether you like it or not, let it rest, and doesn't matter what you and I say. This movie's still going to make $1 billion.
Yep.
It's not breaking records, but it's still doing great after Solo, which, by the way, bombed. I don't know. Maybe Disney, if you're listening, maybe you need to change the talent up top too.
It might
be time to retire some other people up there.
Yeah.
So, and with that, you have been listening to the Pop Zara podcast. We've been talking about Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker, aka Episode 9. Concluding chapter in the 42, which they mentioned in the movie, 42-year-old Skywalker saga. Whether you liked it or not, it's here. It's in theaters. You're probably going to see it, so make your own mind up. We've been chatting with our good friend Ethan Bram. Ethan, thank you very much once again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Please read his review. We'll link to it in the notes. And with that, popzara.com. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn FM. If your app has a podcast, we're probably there. And unlike Palpatine, we're not gross and disgusting. Well, I don't know about you, but we're not all gross and disgusting.
Yeah, not on the air, at least.
And as they say in a certain Rise of Skywalker, the Force will be with you, always, until the credits. And with that, have a good holiday, everybody. Happy holidays, whatever you do. Get some lots of presents, eat a lot of food, stay safe, and we will see everybody next year. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Pop Zara podcast. For more quality original content, check out popzara.com for the latest reviews and previews in gaming, movies, tech, and more.